Hello, it's Marianne Pallister, Justice and Peace Commissioner and Chair of Pax Christi Scotland. As we get nearer and nearer COP26, it's difficult to turn our minds to anything other than the climate emergency. So yes, I am going to be talking about climate change, but I want to focus on an event in October that may seem initially to be unrelated. On October the 17th, it's the United Nations International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. That aims to promote our awareness of the need to eradicate poverty and destitution worldwide, particularly in developing countries. And it couldn't have more to do with the climate emergency, as I'm sure you were already thinking. The observance of the International Day of the Eradication of Poverty dates back to October the 17th, 1987, when 100,000 defenders of human rights gathered in Paris to honour the victims of extreme poverty, violence and hunger on the initiative of Father Joseph Rozinski. They gathered that day on the Trocadéro Plaza in Paris to express their refusal of extreme poverty. From 1992, it was adopted as an international annual event, and in 1993, a commemorative stone symbolising that refusal of extreme poverty was laid on the Palais de l'Europe forecourt, and a similar stone can be found now in George Square in Glasgow. Extreme poverty, violence, hunger. In the past 50 years, I think we can say that too many instances of all three have increasingly occurred because of changes in climate patterns. And of course, those in developing countries who have had so little influence on climate patterns have experienced so much more disruption to their lives. If we go back just four decades to the 1980s, when Father Rozinski initiated this day of action and commemoration, we find the utter tragedy of the famine in Ethiopia, which led to deaths estimated anywhere between 200,000 and 1,200,000. In 1984-85 and in its aftermath, the politics and conflict got in the way of delivering famine assistance. But that drought and the increasingly frequent drought since then, there's one right now affecting Ethiopia, Somalia and Kenya, have been overwhelmingly intensified by climate change. And famine means increased poverty. Rather than being able to eradicate poverty, climate change is making more and more people vulnerable. If there is no food and your children are becoming skin and bones before your very eyes, that's poverty in its most extreme form. We're horrified here in Scotland that the loss of a £20 top-up on universal credit will force families to choose between food and fuel. And in one of the world's richest countries, that is truly shocking. But if you live in one of the world's poorest countries, Burundi, where $700 is the average income per person per year, one drought more is one drought that pushes your health and welfare, your peace and security over the edge. Let's look at Burundi for a moment. It's where Livingstone and Stanley met in 1871. David Livingstone, Scottish missionary turned explorer, searching for the source of the Nile, passed this way on his journey that finally led him to what is today Zambia, where he died, having failed in his quest. Burundi is in the Great Rift Valley, the cradle of humanity, where the first humans emerged. Its neighbours are the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda and Tanzania. It's very beautiful, but according to the World Food Programme, More than half of the population of 11.7 million people are food insecure. That's the jargon for not having more than one meal a day, and possibly not even that. Burundi's total annual production of food would only cover for 55 days per person per year. Yes, there have been many regional crises that have affected Burundi, not least perhaps conflicts in Rwanda and DR Congo that have landed this tiny country with refugees and fleeing insurgents. Yes, the pandemic has added to the difficulties. And yes, the World Food Programme is on the case. But doling out food packages in the face of rainfall deficit, the rising waters of Lake Tanganyika and floods that have aggravated Burundi's food insecurity is not enough. Urgent action must be taken to halt the climate emergency, and even then it will take years to stabilise these abnormalities that threaten life and livelihoods. Staple food prices have soared in so many African countries in the past 5 years. Even peaceful countries like Zambia, where David Livingstone ended his days, have faced hunger because of flash floods, late rains, and unseasonal very high and very low temperatures. Global climate shifts that see hot climate butterflies and birds heading into Scotland also see drastic changes in the ability to grow crops to feed the poorest in countries around the world. No doubt someone will tell me that there have always been famines, that the first recorded famine in ancient Rome was in 441 BC, and that famine was logged throughout the Near East and Judea in 26 BC, leaving the Holy Land insecure and ready to rise up against the Roman occupiers. Other famines have been chronicled throughout the Christian era, including the horrific famine in Ireland in the 1840s, the politics of which we'll leave for another day, and a couple here in the Highlands and Islands, one due to that same potato blight and another because of volcanic activity that cooled the climate in the 1690s. But since the Industrial Revolution, as all the graphs show, the emissions from factories and fossil fuels have had their increasingly dire effects on the whole planet, our common home. Instead of eradicating poverty, we are, if you'll pardon the expression, feeding it. There's something called the Global Climate Risk Index, which analyses to what extent countries and regions have been affected by the impact of weather-related loss events, such as storms, floods, heat waves, and so on. The index's latest analysis this year says that the countries and territories most affected in 2019, when the last figures were available, were Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and the Bahamas. Looking back a little further, the index shows that from the year 2000 to 2019, Puerto Rico, Myanmar, and Haiti ranked highest. This is the Climate Risk Index's 16th edition of analysis, and it reconfirms earlier results that less developed countries are generally more affected than industrialized countries. And in regard to future climate change, it suggested that the index may serve as a red flag for already existing vulnerability that may further increase in regions where extreme events will become more frequent and more severe due to climate change. These facts and figures can, I admit, seem meaningless until we remember that every storm that rips through the Bahamas renders many more families homeless, hungry, and deeper in debt as they try to rebuild their lives, that every fire burns homes, kills individuals like you and me, kills their much-loved pets, their livestock, destroying their crops and wildlife. Bring these events closer to home. We've seen disastrous floods in Europe and the UK, and every flood turns homes into stinking cesspits, ruining precious family photographs, the laptops that helped the kids study in lockdown and allowed parents to work from home, the possessions that have taken a lifetime to accumulate, destroyed in a violent surge of water that wipes out life savings and makes insuring a house, a farm, a pub, a shop, almost impossible. That induced poverty may not be as extreme as we'd find in Burundi or parts of India or in indigenous populations around the world, but all things are comparative. The House of Commons Scottish Affairs Committee stated back in 2014 that there are basically three current definitions of poverty in common usage: absolute poverty, relative poverty, and social exclusion. Absolute poverty is defined as the lack of sufficient resources with which to keep body and soul together. Relative poverty defines income or resources in relation to the average. It is concerned with the absence of the material needs to participate fully in accepted daily life. Social exclusion was then a new term used by the government, and the Prime Minister, that was David Cameron back in 2014, described social exclusion as a shorthand label for what can happen when individuals or areas suffer from a combination of linked problems such as unemployment, poor skills, low incomes, poor housing, high crime environments, bad health, and family breakdown. Those three very clinical definitions have been muddied in the past couple of years by the pandemic and by the effects of climate change. I think that there can be too many statistics waved in front of us, and I'm as guilty as the next, and not enough focus on the humanity affected by poverty wherever they live in our common home. Perhaps we need another Father Joseph Rosinski, initiator of this initial International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. Unlike David Cameron, this was a man who knew the reality of poverty. He was born to immigrant parents in a poor neighbourhood of Angers in France and grew up in a family that suffered from great poverty and social exclusion. In 1946, he was ordained a priest and served in industrial and rural parishes where, from the beginning, he related to the most disadvantaged families. In 1956, he became chaplain to 250 families placed in an emergency housing camp in Noisy-le-Grand, near Paris. The families lived in huts erected in a muddy field, and he said of his time there, "The families in that camp have inspired everything I have undertaken for their liberation. They took hold of me, they lived within me, they carried me forward, they pushed me to found ATD Fourth World with them." And ATD stands for All Together in Dignity. It was a revolutionary idea, replacing soup kitchens and donations of old clothes with a library, a kindergarten and a chapel. He created a research institute on extreme poverty that brought together researchers from different countries and different disciplines. His purpose was to unite all sections of society around those in extreme poverty. With this aim, he met leaders of state, churches and international bodies from all over the world. He believed that every man or woman he met represented a chance for those in extreme poverty, and he was determined that ATD Fourth World would remain open to people of all cultures, faiths and races. He was appointed to France's Economic and Social Council in 1979, and the publication of the Rosinski Report in 1987 succeeded in gaining recognition of those in extreme poverty as partners in society. And then there was the ceremony on the 17th of October 1987, when he unveiled that commemorative stone, which his call is engraved. And it says, wherever men and women are condemned to live in extreme poverty, human rights are violated. To come together to ensure that these rights be respected is our solemn duty. Today, we recognize that it is our solemn duty to combine that pledge to respect the rights of the poor and the crusade to eradicate poverty with the urgent need to halt this climate emergency. May we be a voice as effective as Rysinski's that makes our leaders recognize the links and act on them. Now, thank you for your voice and thank you for listening.